This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Teach for America started as an idea put forth in an undergraduate thesis when its author, Wendy Kopp, was at Princeton University. But unlike many ideas put forth in such publications, it didn't die there. Wendy Kopp has spent the last 20 years making her idea a reality. In the intervening years, Teach for America has trained and placed thousands of teachers in low-income schools all over the country, including Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. She's in town for a luncheon later today to talk about how her organization is helping to close the achievement gap. Wendy Kopp joins us for the hour. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thank you.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us in our Spirit Square studio is Tim Hurley, Executive Director for Charlotte's Teach for America program. You've been on this program before, haven't you?
No, this is my first time.
First time?
First time.
Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Somebody from Teach for America in Charlotte's been here. I know that in all these years. What is your personal interest in education in America? Let's go back 20 years. Why the thesis? What's your personal interest in all this, Wendy?
You know, I came to this in, I guess, an unlikely way, having grown up in, you know, a privileged community in Dallas, Texas, going to public schools. But really, somehow I got to Princeton without realizing the extent of the disparities that exist in our country. And, you know, you could never begin to see, of course, the depths of educational inequity at Princeton. But what I saw there, and what I think you can see on any college campus in America, is how differently prepared kids are to do well in college based on where they're born. My freshman year roommate had gone to a public school in the South Bronx and was obviously just completely brilliant and driven, but really struggled just given her academic preparation to meet the demands of Princeton. And, you know, through her, I gained a window into the experiences of other first generation college students. And that ultimately led me to become really focused on this issue of educational inequity, just the fact that where you're born in our country, you know, a country that aspires so very admirably to be a place of equal opportunity, nonetheless determines your educational outcomes and in turn life outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a public policy major and just a concerned college student, organized a conference on this topic and such. And that's what ultimately I think led me to this idea.
And theses generally sit on college libraries' shelves and never see the light of day, particularly undergraduate work, not graduate school work. Mm-hmm. You actually went to work on this. How soon after college did you begin Teach for America, or the beginnings of it?
What happened to lead me to this idea is that I was in a funk as a college student and as a senior. I mean, only for the first time in my life, as I tried to figure out what in the world I was going to do after I graduated, I found myself searching for something I wasn't finding. And, you know, our generation had this label, the me generation, and supposedly all we wanted to do was go out and work on Wall Street. And I, like my peers at Princeton, was applying to these two-year corporate programs, which I think is great if that's what you know you really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But what I saw was, that's not what I really wanted to do, and it's not what anyone I knew wanted to do. They were just doing that because those were the only options. And I started thinking, this label is wrong. It's not that we all want to go do that. It's that no one else is asking us to do anything else. And that's what led me to this idea, was to say, you know what, why aren't we being recruited as aggressively to commit 2 years to teach in our lowest income communities as aggressively as we were being recruited at the time to work on Wall Street. So the reason that this did not just go on a shelf was that I was just obsessed with the idea and with the fact that actually college students, the most talented and driven people I knew, would jump at the chance to do this. And I myself thinking that's what I would want to do straight out of college. So I think it was also just an idea of its time, and it quickly magnetized mm-hmm. support and help. And, you know, so I turned in the thesis, and the next day sent it out to some executives who I saw quoted in an article saying that they wanted to take on education reform, and one of them gave me a seed grant. So there wasn't a moment that I wasn't working on this after I turned the thesis in.
It occurs to me that although we've done programs on this in the past, that there may be people who don't know what Teach for America is, how it interfaces with the school systems around the country, et cetera. So give me a thumbnail on exactly what it does and who it is and what it's all about.
The big idea of Teach for America is to say we need to channel the energy of our country's most promising future leaders against the injustice that we think is our country's most fundamental injustice. Again, this issue of educational inequity. So we go out and recruit outstanding recent college graduates, people of all different academic majors, all different career interests, and ask them to commit 2 years to teach in public schools in urban and rural areas. We invest a tremendous amount in their training and professional development during the 2 years. And the idea is that there's a really important immediate impact and really important long-term impacts. And in the immediate term, this is one critical source of teachers who are willing to go above and beyond traditional expectations to help move their kids forward. And in the long run, we're building this force of leaders who know what you know, having taught successfully in low-income communities, and who, as a result of that, will go on and work throughout their lives to work for the fundamental changes necessary to one day ensure that actually all of our children have the opportunity to attain an excellent education.
Tim Hurley's with us. He's the executive director of Teach for America here in Charlotte. Is that your story? I mean, take us back to college for a second, and what were you majoring in? What were your life plans before you found Teach for America?
Sure. Yeah, I am one of the people who jumped at the chance to join in this work. I was a senior at Vanderbilt. I had planned on being an attorney. That's what my brother was. But, you know, for me, actually, education, it was sort of in my blood. Four generations before me had been teachers. My mom started out as a teacher in inner city Philadelphia. So she likes to joke. She was one of the young Teach for America teachers. And she graduated at 22, went and taught fourth grade. But I never saw it as a path for me. I was at a club meeting at Vanderbilt. Someone came in and spoke briefly about this thing called Teach for America. In 2002, it was actually, we saw a big jump in application numbers, but it wasn't really well known then. I heard him talking. I wanted to know, is this something real, or is he just trying to sell me something? And so I remember I caught him on the steps, and I said, look, Teach for America, I mean, do you really believe in it? Or, again, are you just selling me something? He said, look, I'm a teacher. It is a Saturday afternoon. I'm taking my free time to do this. And, yeah, it's because I believe in it. So I did my research. I saw the caliber of people doing it. And also I saw they're working in the Mississippi Delta. And for me, I grew up in Mississippi. I went to public school in Mississippi. I knew I'd had an excellent education, but I knew that wasn't the case for so many of my peers. And going in, I said, this is a place for me to give back for 2 years.
You had an excellent education in Mississippi in the public schools?
I did. Clinton, Mississippi did a good job for me.
It's a revelation. Because we keep hearing bad things about Mississippi all the time. So it even within states that are 49th, 50th in education, you can get a good education if you're in the right school.
Absolutely. I mean, and it goes back for me to the quality of the teachers that I had in that school. But again, across the state of Mississippi, that wasn't the case.
So with Teach for America, you could still be a lawyer. You could still go out and practice law someplace at some point in time. But somehow you got into the nitty-gritty of all this. You actually taught in the classroom. Where did you teach?
I taught in Marks, Mississippi, population 1,500, a very small town. I taught, and I actually did apply to law school during my second year of teaching. I was accepted at Stanford. I deferred for a year to actually go and work on staff with Teach for America. So I worked as a recruitment director. And Wake Forest was actually one of my schools. I talked a lot of people out of going into law school and into teaching first. Then I actually did go to law school. I spent 3 years at Stanford where I studied law and education, because by that point I knew I wanted to work somewhere in the field of education, but thought it was going to be law and education. After finishing my studies and taking the Mississippi bar, I realized my passion actually wasn't in law and education. It was just in education. And so I came here to Charlotte to work with Teach for America.
You talk about your suspicion of the recruiter or the person who came to speak to you in Mississippi, but you ended up being a recruiter for Teach for America. And evidently three of the four universities that you interacted with, Vanderbilt, Wake Forest, William & Mary, and the University of Maryland, you were the leading postgraduate employer at three of those four schools.
That's
an astounding thing. I don't think people understand that there are companies all over the country who come to these schools and recruit graduates. Teach for America is a leading recruiter of graduates of these institutions, not just those that you dealt with, but all over the country, correct?
Yeah. We had 46,000 people apply to Teach for America this year. I believe 17% of Duke's senior class applied to Teach for America. You know, we're getting extraordinary. 12% of Ivy League seniors applied to Teach for America. We place a huge focus on diversity, and I think it's just absolutely stunning to think about, you know, 40% of the African American seniors at Harvard applied to Teach for America, 60% of the Pell Grant recipients, students who themselves, you know, grew up in low-income areas from Princeton applied to Teach for America. Just extraordinary talent and an incredibly diverse talent pool.
But how, explain to me how somebody with intentions to go to law school and become a lawyer, somebody who wants to be a chemical engineer, somebody who is studying nuclear physics, somebody who, I don't know, is a music major or something, and they decide to either delay that or they never go into it because they get sidetracked by Teach for America. What do they bring to the classroom that isn't brought to the classroom by somebody who's devoted their undergraduate and perhaps some of their postgraduate experience to education, coming out of college with a teaching degree?
Well, you know, first of all, there are many extremely talented individuals who channel their energy toward this through traditional paths, and we're aiming to be one more source of talented, determined teachers who want to teach in the hardest to staff areas. What Teach for America looks for is leadership ability. You know, what we've come to see is that, first of all, we've seen teachers who affect significant academic gains on behalf of their kids. So they'll start teaching in an area where their kids, maybe at the fourth grade level, are reading three grades behind level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of these folks will literally aspire to put their kids on a level playing field, and literally a couple years later, you'll see they're on level, you know, in the fifth grade. So what differentiates the teachers who can affect such dramatic progress in their students' achievement levels? And what we've come to see over time is that it's leadership ability. You know, these teachers are coming into their classrooms and setting a very ambitious vision of where their kids will be at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They're getting the kids and the kids' parents to own that vision, to say, okay, we know where we are now. We're going to get ourselves to be on track to going to college. And then they'll be very purposeful. You walk into these teachers' classrooms and you literally feel a sense of urgency. You feel like kids on a mission. And then these teachers will just do whatever it takes. They realize, I don't have enough time to move my kids 3 years forward in a year's time, so I better get them there early and keep them late and get them there on Saturday. So we're looking for fundamental leadership qualities.
How much leeway does a Teach for America teacher have within a school system, in the public schools? I mean, we hear conversations on this program constantly from teachers, how they are restricted in what they can and cannot do, and how the leadership comes from the top down, and quite often that's not what is needed, but they have to do it. And then they have the end-of-year grades that they have to prepare kids for, and they have no child left behind requirements that have to be handled. It leaves very little time for creativity, very little time for this, very little time for that. And yet you're telling me that these people come into the classroom and teach in a whole different way. Doesn't that rub some people the wrong way?
Well, they approach, I would say, their schools with a great deal of, as we say at Teach for America, respect and humility. I mean, absolutely, these are new teachers. They have a lot to learn, and they're the first to recognize that. I think they're also just people who are deeply centered in their kids and in the stakes for their kids. And the fact is that we have a crisis in our schools and classrooms. You know, we're working with kids who, you know, half of kids in low-income communities will not even graduate from high school, and the half who do will be at an eighth grade skill level. You know, and so we have teachers who, first and foremost, are thinking about that and are willing to just do whatever it takes to address that issue.
We'll come back and talk more about this. So Wendy Copps, the founder and CEO of Teach for America. Tim Hurley is the executive director of the Charlotte Division. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part today by FX, presenting the new drama series Justified. Timothy Oliphant stars as U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens. Justified begins tonight at 10 on FX. More information at fxnetworks.com. And by UNC Charlotte's Pathway to Teaching program, preparing individuals for a teaching career today. Details available online at pathwaytoteaching.com. Well, much of the media today has been infected by something I call snark. Strains of nasty, knowing, snide abuse that seethes and snarls and mockingly laughs through much of AM talk radio and cable, and even reaches into some print publication. Snark works. That's why it's used. But New Yorker film critic David Denby says it's ruining our conversation, and we'll have a conversation with him about that snark, that is, tomorrow at 9.
A faster, cheaper, and more widely available internet. How the FCC is proposing to remake the country's communications infrastructure, and what it could mean for consumers, the future of television, and U.S. competitiveness. The Diane Rehm Show, Tuesday.
It's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 FM WFAE, your NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Teach for America today because Wendy Kopp is in town. She's the founder and CEO of that organization. And Tim Hurley is also with us to shed some Charlotte Mecklenburg perspective on this because he is the executive director of the organization here in Charlotte. Just before the break, we were talking about with Wendy about how these teachers come in and they transform the educational experience in many cases for these young people who have fallen through the cracks prior to the arrival of some of these teachers and their extraordinary expectations and the way they conduct themselves. And I'm just wondering how it works here in Charlotte Mecklenburg, Tim, because the school day goes a certain length, and it's Monday through Friday, and that's just how it is. We have an agricultural system all over the country, and that's why it's the way it is. And today's educational crisis requires more than that. When a teacher from Teach for America comes into a CMS classroom and says, okay, here are the expectations. They're very different from what's happened before. We're going to have you come in early. We're going to have you stay late. You're going to come on Saturday sometime. How's that go over with the administration, with the students, with the parents?
You know, I would say it varies. It varies by the teacher. It varies by the school. I'd say sometimes when they're coming in, the students were fortunate to have had an exceptional teacher the year before because there are many exceptional teachers in CMS. And so sometimes the kids are coming in and they recognize that. They recognize a teacher that thinks they can achieve at the highest levels and is ready to push them to those levels. Other times there does need to be a culture shift. And one of the things we focus with on our teachers is you can control what happens in your classroom and make sure that time is used absolutely as productively and effectively as possible. But you also need to reach outside of your classroom to invest the people that matter to the students. So if it is connecting with the parents, connecting with the coach, connecting with a mentor, they need to invest them in that student's education. And so, for example, one of the things we really focus on with our teachers is when you have a parent-teacher conference, a lot of times we'll see a low attendance rate. Not a lot of parents come out for that. And sometimes the teachers will think, well, maybe it's because the parents aren't invested in their kids. We fundamentally disagree with that. We know parents are invested in their kids. Mm-hmm. So what we tell our teachers is you need to figure out what is keeping that parent from coming and figure out how to get them to come. You know, across the administration and the principals, I think we have excellent leadership in Dr. Gorman, and we see more and more schools and more principals really aligned to pushing students ahead.
But does this cause friction among the other teachers within the administration of a school? Because this is like a rogue individual operating under their own principles.
You know, I really would hope it's not a rogue individual. Because one of the things, again, that we focus on is coming into our schools and communities with a sense of respect and humility. I can tell you when I started teaching in Mississippi, very near to my first, my start of my first year in Mississippi, they said I was department chair for the fourth grade. I was teaching with a number of teachers with 10, 15 years of experience. And the first thing I did is I went to my principal and said, you know, are you sure you want me to do this? Does this seem right? She said, yeah, you know, we think you'll be good. And so then I went and talked to the veteran teachers and said, you know what? Y'all have been doing a tremendous amount of work. They've asked me to do this. What do you all think? And they said, they said, you know what, baby? It's all you.
It's all you. They knew something you didn't know.
But I'll tell you, working with those teachers over the course of the year, we actually changed the way that my fourth grade was structured. It had been structured where it was run like a high school, so each teacher just taught one subject. And that's really not the best developmental approach for fourth graders. At the end of that first year, we shifted to team teaching, where two teachers shared classes. And it represented a significant effort on the part of those teachers.
But how did you know to do that? You studied law. You didn't go to education. You didn't go to the school for education at Mississippi. Where did you go? Vanderbilt?
I went to Vanderbilt.
How did you know to do that?
Well, one, I'd received excellent training from Teach for America. We actually have an intensive summer institute where we teach the fundamentals of the research-based fundamentals of effective teaching. And also, as soon as I got in the classroom, I studied education. I kept working to increase my amount of knowledge.
Yeah. Let's get back to this fundamental problem that we have in America, which is inequities. And we spent so much time, particularly in this city, Wendy. I know you're not familiar with Charlotte, per se, but we were the poster child for busing to end integration around the country. we spent a lot of time and effort and money and political capital to make sure that kids were spread through the system and that everybody got a good education. That's now ended because of another court order that stopped it. We've gone to this neighborhood school situation, but some of the neighborhood schools are better than others. Some of the teachers in the neighborhood schools are better than others. How, and this is not just Charlotte, this has happened around the country. Why, if we pay all this lip service to it, if we know that these kids, and we do know because you've brought it up and other people have brought it up, that these kids who are underprivileged drop out of high school more frequently, a lot more frequently than those who are not, who when they leave high school maybe have an eighth grade education. We know it cripples them for life. It cripples the economy. It hurts the economy desperately. We're in a world economy with massive competition. We know all this. Why do we still have this problem?
You know, one thing I would say is that we are making enormous progress. My major headline is what motivates me right now is seeing not only the extent of the problem, but seeing the possibility of change. And I just think about where we were a mere 15 years ago when I think we could have counted on one hand the number of schools in low-income communities that were affecting truly transformational change for kids, just completely changing the academic trajectories of their kids, producing college graduation rates that look similar to those in other communities. I mean, maybe two schools in the country, and there was no notion that we could figure out what those schools were doing and replicate their success. And I just fast forward to today where, you know, we have hundreds of schools, you know, 200-300 schools that are affecting transformational progress, dozens of communities.
But you have said, you just said it a moment ago, that we have a crisis in education today. So we still have the crisis.
We have a crisis in the most aggregate sense, and that is a depressing reality. But the reason I know that we will move the needle against that problem is what I see in communities across the country, where not only are we seeing just hardcore evidence that we did not have 15 years ago at the classroom level and at the school level, that it is possible not just to affect incremental progress for kids, but transformational progress. But now we have school systems that are affecting serious change at the system level. I would say Charlotte Mecklenburg being a prime example. But, you know, if you look back 5 years ago, if we had asked folks to list the most entrenched school systems in America, certainly high on the list would be places like New Orleans, Washington, D.C., Baltimore. You know, if you look at what's happening in those are systems that are moving the needle for kids right now.
And how are they doing it?
So, and this is the most, this is the thing that gives me the most optimism of all. At every level, classroom level, school level, system level, wherever there's positive change happening, what you realize is this is about talent and leadership. It's not about magic. There's nothing elusive. There are extraordinary people going at it. And that what gives me optimism is that we are finally realizing. I mean, I listened to Dr. Gorman here talking in Charlotte, and he knows this is about people and leadership. 15 years ago, to find superintendents who really understood that's what it's about, it was hard to find people who knew that's what it was about.
What did they think it was about then?
Oh, goodness. I mean, when I got started in this, we spent conference after conference listening to people talk about how curricular change was going to, you know, create a new day. Or, you know, give every kid a computer. Or, I mean, it was one silver bullet after another. Even governance change. I mean, we need governance change. We need curricular change. But ultimately, we were looking for the silver bullet that would just solve our problem.
And how do we know that this is not a silver bullet?
Well, this just isn't a silver bullet in any context. I mean, ultimately, when you think about what creates success in any organization, you know, we all know it's always people, talent, leadership, building strong cultures, accountability, continuous improvement. I mean, all the basics. So it's not a silver bullet. It's just that's what it takes to attain success anywhere. And for some reason, I think for many years, we were trying to find a way around the hard work of engaging in that in our school systems. And what encourages me is to see, you know, federal policy, you know, state leaders and district leaders who actually get that that's what it is about.
Did you know this when you started Teach for America, or is this something that's grown from the process of being involved in it?
Actually, I think I view my 20 years in this as a process of demystification, you know, at least my initial years. I had a very strong sense 10 years in that there was no magic to this, that ultimately this was about people, leadership, you know, doing all the things that would account for success in any sector. But you know, I, like others, started off thinking, I don't know the answer, you know.
So when you say that Teach for America has developed a clear understanding of how successful teachers attain exceptional results with students in low-income communities, that's what you're talking about?
I think at the classroom level, yes, actually. I think at the classroom level, you know, what it takes is someone who approaches teaching in the way that great leaders approach anything, right? So at the classroom level, it looks like, you know, I think about a woman named Tara Harrington who taught biology here to 10th graders in CMS and, you know, came in teaching a class of students who had been the worst performing on the biology and, of course, end of year exam the year before. And she comes in and says, you know what, this year 100% of my kids are going to score threes and fours on the state exam. We're going to show, we want to perform as well as the top performing students in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Who does that? Only great leaders, right? Like, that's crazy. She says, here's where we're going to be, like, sets the great vision. And then she gets her kids obsessed with getting there. She has them tracking their progress. She has classes competing against each other. And she just goes about the incredibly hard work of maximizing every second she has to take kids who are reading, you know, four grade levels below where they should be, whose basic skill level is not where you would think it would need to be to produce the kind of results she was aiming to achieve. And, you know, she gets the parents engaged, et cetera, et cetera. By the end of the year, 93% of her kids scored threes and fours on that test. Her kids were the highest performing biology students across Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
What's her name again?
Her name is Tara Harrington.
And is she a Teach for America teacher?
She finished her two-year commitment last year.
Yep, she's training teachers in Colorado now.
Okay. Really? But she did this here while she was with Teach for America.
Yeah.
Is that because these are young people who come in with the passion and fire of youth? And the naivete that youth brings with it, that they don't know what can't be done, so they're just going to do it, as opposed to somebody who's been in the job for 10 or 20 or even 5 years in some cases, and who just sees all the problems and just feels burdened by it and slogs through the day as best they can.
I mean, I don't want to oversimplify. I do think that there is a real power in inexperience, you know, and I think at some level Teach for America itself, its mere existence is a product of the fact that I, as a 21-year-old, was too naive to realize that it was sort of a crazy idea. And I see our teachers go in and ask questions that other people wouldn't ask out of pure naivete, you know, and as a result accomplish great things. At the same time, you know, if we've learned anything through Teach for America's own story and through our teachers' experience, it's that experience really matters and time really matters. Mm-hmm. I think the real differentiator, although I think that the inexperience, you know, especially in the face of just deeply entrenched problems, I think we often see through history that young people end up, you know, sort of changing history. So I think that plays a role. But I think more fundamentally, it's the kind of person Tara is. You know, when we recruited her, She had been an extraordinary leader as a college student, you know, and we're looking for people like Tara who have a level of perseverance, a level of ability to influence and motivate others, problem-solving ability, organization ability, and just a deep, deep, deep commitment. I mean, you talk to Tara, she is someone who loves her kids. And once you fall in love with your kids, you're going to do anything that it takes to ensure that their futures are better than they were going to be when you found them.
Wendy Kopp is the founder and CEO of Teach for America. She's with us in our Spirit Square studio along with Tim Hurley, who is executive director of the Charlotte Region Teach for America program. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or every other way humanly possible at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Put your headphones on. We will take a call from Travis in Charlotte. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, it's a pleasure. So I'm joining the, I'm already been accepted to the 2010 core and will be teaching in the Mississippi Delta. And one of my questions is this, I've kind of noticed this disconnect between the education establishment and Teach for America in terms of the youthfulness. So people saying that we're wet behind the ears or that we don't know what we're talking about or that we don't have the experience that you guys were just talking about. So one of my questions is how is that gap being bridged between the two sides, if there are two sides, or is this just some kind of media hype about the two different sides of the story here?
Hi, Travis. Well, first of all, we're excited to have you joining our core. You know, I think so much of this comes down to the approach our, the people like you yourself will take in your school. You know, and what we've seen over time is that when our teachers understand that as much as they have to give, they have so much to learn because this is, you know, there is so much that goes into truly successful teaching. And when you enter a school community and try to learn from the teachers who are there, ultimately what we've seen is that there's just such a kind of win-win relationship. And actually the reality is that most of the veteran teachers our core members work with, you know, love working with them and really hugely appreciate them. And there's all sorts of, you know, objective evidence of that. But it's all about how the core members themselves approach it.
Does that answer your question, Travis?
That did. I mean, it does help. You know, I think a lot of it is kind of hyped up in the media and stuff. And I think that once you're on the ground, there's a kind of a bond or kind of a stronger relationship between your colleagues that you're working with than just what you may get from talking points from the NEA and that kind of thing about TFA and its effectiveness and so forth. So,
thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let me go to Gail in Charlotte. You're on WFAE. Gail, welcome.
Yes, I just have a question. I know there's an increasing kind of focus on accountability of teachers over the last decade or so, especially with the No Child Left Behind Act. I'm interested. I think that there's so much more that parents can do, and so much more, statistically speaking, that parent involvement has to do with the success of children. And I'm wondering if you see any trending towards some way to hold parents more accountable for the success of their children, as opposed to holding the. I mean, teacher accountability is important, but. But it seems like we need to bring parents into the mix if we're really going to be successful.
I have about 30 seconds.
What we've found is that successful teachers bring the parents in. And, you know, the vast majority of parents really want what's best for their kids and honestly are looking for ways to engage in and support their kids' education. So effective teachers communicate well with them, bring them into the process. Absolutely, I think that's fundamental.
We'll take more of your calls and emails. I've already got a raft of them here that I'll share with you in a moment or two. When we come back from the break, Wendy Kopp is with us. She's in town today for Teach for America. She's the founder and CEO, and Tim Hurley is also with us, the executive director of Teach for America, Charlotte. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part today by Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute at Carolina's Medical Center Mercy. Information and a confidential heart disease questionnaire at cmc-mercy.org/heart. And by Distance Education at UNCC, now accepting applications for fall admission in the online Master of Science in Engineering Management. distanceed.uncc.edu. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, a faster, cheaper, more widely available internet. How the FCC is proposing to remake the country's communications infrastructure and what it could mean for consumers and the U.S. telecommunications industry. That's at 10 o'clock this morning on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talk. Back in 30 seconds.
I'm Mark Rumsey. At WFAE, we believe radio is a source for new ideas and voices in stories rich with textures from distant places.
From the streets of Tehran today rose voices that would have been unthinkable.
And stories from right here at home.
The truth is that some of the jobs that have been lost in the auto industry and elsewhere won't be coming back.
Whether you need to know what's happening next door or across the globe, join me for All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 till 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Teach for America. Wendy Kopp, the founder and CEO, is here in town. She's with us in the studio with Tim Hurley, who's the executive director of the Charlotte branch of that. Before we go back to the phones, we have a lot of calls and some web comments I want to share with you. When a Teach for America teacher or several teachers come into a school or a system and they have success, they set these high goals and the goals are achieved, what does that do within the school or within the system? Does that rub off on teachers? Does it rub off on administrators? Does it light a fire under people? Does it show them, after all these years of not being able to get it done, that, by gosh, it can be done?
Yeah. You know, as I talk with principals across Charlotte, I mean, what they say is that they welcome the energy and the passion that our teachers bring. And, you know, if you're part of an organization in a school, you want the entire school to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again and again, what principals say is, I love it when your teachers come in because they are on fire to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually see them re-inspiring other teachers who have been teaching for years and maybe have lost some of that inspiration. And also, I mean, the relationships that our incoming teachers have with the veteran teachers, it's just tremendous. Because one of the things we do say is, go find exceptional teaching. Because what we're doing, it's not something magic.
Mm-hmm.
Exceptional teaching in a Teach for America classroom looks like exceptional teaching in a veteran classroom. And so we want our teachers to seek those people out and soak up every bit of knowledge they can from them.
I don't want to throw cold water on this conversation, but I have to bring this up because last week we did an hour-long conversation with folks from Harvard University who just released a study of Charlotte-Mecklenburg School. They've conducted studies around the country, the D.C. system, I think, two systems in Atlanta, Georgia, and other places. And it revealed that within CMS, at least, there was very little difference in performance in math and science in grades 4 and 8, which are the grades they test, between Teach for America teachers and other teachers. What impact might that have on your program within Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, and how do you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what the study showed was that our teachers performed at the same level as other first-year teachers and second-year teachers, so teachers with the same level of experience. What it does for us is it shows me I'm ready to dig in and to figure out what's underneath that and how we can push our students ahead. Because, you know, the reason our teachers come and the reason we all work in CMS is we want to push our students ahead to fundamentally different life paths. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's a place to dig in and go to work.
But in fairness to you, evidently at the high school level, Teach for America teachers are excelling.
That's right. You know, there have been a number of studies done, both here in CMS and actually across the state of North Carolina, that show that at the high school level, our teachers are effectively pushing their students ahead. And so my goal, you know, we know the success is possible in grades 4 through 8. I see an example of a woman like Carla Hamida. She taught 7th grade at Eastway. 97% of her students were proficient at math at the end of the year. That's compared with a 68% average for CMS. So we know it's possible. And again, you look at Carla, there's nothing magic about what she's doing. She's using these basic teaching practices. So my job now is to figure out, all right, what is she doing, and how do we replicate that across more of our teachers? And what principals are doing is they're saying, all right, what is Carla doing, and how do we replicate that across more of our teachers?
Mm-hmm. This was an outside study that's done for the school system, and it looked at a lot of things. Teach for America was one tiny, tiny, tiny part of this. And it was only 4th and 8th grade, and only math and reading, not science, not anything else. But across the country, are there outside studies, or do you need outside studies? Because you've got your own studies that indicate how well you're doing. How well are you doing across the country?
There is a growing body of research, independent studies, that do show that our core members are more effective than other teachers with the same level of experience, and in many cases, even veteran and certified teachers in their schools. This said, you know, I think what every one of these studies shows is that there's still a long way to go to truly do what we're aiming to do, which is to have a leadership force of teachers who are, in fact, truly putting their kids on a different life path. Some of our core members are doing that. And by our own internal data, an increasing percentage of them are. And so we are determined to learn more and more about what is it that differentiates the people who are, in fact, affecting significant academic gains and then to feed those lessons into our approach to admissions and select and training and development of our teachers.
Let's go back to the telephones and to Belmont. Kathleen, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Good morning. I have close ties to Teach for America. My twins have both are alums. One from the DC Corps, and one still teaches at West Philly High. And my third daughter probably will accept a position to teach in San Antonio next year with Teach for America. My question is, my daughter who is at West Philly High has the program there, they've begun a ninth grade leadership academy. They are seeing tremendous gains with the ninth graders. However, the superintendent has named West Philly High a Renaissance school, which is not something you want to be. And the current path is that the school, the entire administration and staff will be fired at the end of this school year. The superintendent will take over the school and make it a promise academy. My understanding is this is in an effort to secure some of the race for the top money. What are your thoughts on race to the top?
You know, so I think, you know, this all becomes challenging at the ground level. Where
to say my daughter's frustrated and we've had lots of tears is an understatement.
Well, I hope she's talking and making her voice heard, you know,
she
both.
As is the community, the parents, the students.
I think the sad reality is that we have, you know, high schools in our country which literally have single-digit graduation rates. We have middle schools that are, you know, producing eighth graders who literally have fourth and fifth grade skill levels. So this is a crisis. And in all of those schools, you can find pockets of excellence, but what you also find is schools that have been misserving kids for year after year. And as a parent, you know, if my kid was in one of those schools, I would simply do whatever it took
to
get them out.
Can you explain to me how this is possible? Hold on, Kathleen. Can you explain to me, because I've done a million shows on this, and I still don't get it. How is this possible?
Well, that's exactly what we ask every day. And I think it's honestly, we need more people who understand that actually it doesn't have to be this way. I think most people in America look at those results and assume that, gosh, the kids must not care, their parents must not care. What our people know, and actually what your daughter knows, is no, that's not it. It's that they haven't been given the chances they deserve. And actually what has the potential to happen in the Renaissance Schools Initiative is, you know, your daughter can apply again and she could end up back in a school with a stronger overall team and administration and a stronger overall culture for success that she's contributing to and making probably all the greater impact in. That's the vision, how it plays out on the ground level. I'm sure they want her help and many other people's help in making it go well.
Well, her big frustration is the superintendent's lack of direct knowledge of the school, as in hasn't visited the school.
Hopefully she's talking with Ben Rayer, Teach for America alum, right hand to the superintendent, charged with the Renaissance Schools in Philly, who I know would love her partnership in helping make this go well at the ground level.
Kathleen, thank you for your call. You're telling me, I'm going to read, maybe you're saying it directly and I'm just not listening, or maybe I'm reading between the lines, I don't know. But are you telling me that in situations like this, where we have these kids with these high schools with single-digit graduation rates, which means that for years these kids have been improperly served, if you want to use your term, that this is because of benign neglect or because they just look at these kids and say, well, they're from poor backgrounds and they can't make it, so we'll just shuffle them through the system and hope they get out the other end alive. Is that what you're saying?
I think that the expectations, it's just a downward cycle, you know, and you see kids who are coming in way behind. They seem not to be motivated. People seem not to care. And what you don't realize is, wow, this could all be very different if we were you know, showing but kids a path.
But you have kids who have bad experiences in schools. For some reason, they don't learn to read well. They don't learn math skills. So by the time they get to the fourth grade, the light in their eyes goes out because going to school becomes a burden. It's embarrassing. They can't keep up. They know they can't keep up, and they're at a stage in their lives where they don't want to be embarrassed by their peers. How do you turn the light back on? How do you correct that situation? How do you re-engage these children?
So when you're that fifth grade teacher, you know, the first thing you got to do is figure out, what am I going to do with my kids that could make a meaningful difference to them? So you realize my kids are reading, doing math at, if we're lucky, you know, generally second, maybe third grade level. And honestly, our great teachers would go out and would have this conversation with the kids and their parents and would say, you are at the third grade level or you're at the second grade level. You should be at the fifth grade level. There's no reason you can't be. If you work with me this year, we're going to get there. And they will convince the kids and the parents that they can do it and that it's fundamentally important to their lives. And they'll have their kids on a mission. You know, I walk into these classrooms. I wish, you know, this is what we all want as parents, right? And you realize, wow, like we've got the kids obsessing over reading levels, and like literally tracking their progress, towards dramatic academic gains. So it's just somehow, so you walk into that classroom and right next door, you might see another classroom, same fifth graders, you know, who are not quite so enthused. So that's what leads you to realize, you know what, this is absolutely in the hands of the adults in the system.
Well, let me share with you a comment that came in earlier in the program from somebody on the web, on our website, and this is edited, but these Teach for America aspirations, that person says, are all well and good, and I applaud you for your idealism, but you are still not taking into account simple demographics as well as biological, racial, ethnic differences in intelligence and educational abilities that are hindering many groups from moving forward in the 21st century. To continue to irrationally ignore or deny the huge role of demographics, and I'm not sure he's using that word properly, as well as racial, ethnic differences in intelligence is pure folly.
You know, the brilliance of Teach for America at some level is that we're producing this incredibly large force of leaders in our country who know what you know after you've taught in low-income communities, which is that your kids have every bit as much potential as kids in other communities.
But is this attitude shared by some educators, and that's how you can explain away what's going on in these schools with low expectations and low graduation rates?
Again, to echo what Tim said, first of all, there are many educators in the system who do, of course, have high expectations for kids. But absolutely, our school system is absolutely plagued by low expectations for kids. That's one of the most fundamental problems.
Let's go to Joe in Mooresville. You're on WFAE, Joe.
Hi, how are y'all doing? I'm really enjoying this program. I heard interviews and discussions you were having with Peter Gorman last week, or his people, and saying that the effectiveness of teachers after 3 years seemed to kind of level off, which I thought was kind of interesting and sad at the same time. But my question is, how is recruiting going for you guys who are going after folks, buddy-duddies like me and the baby boomer generation who want to do something other than keep our nose to the grindstone, shoulders to the wheel, and keep on working in industry, but who really want to get out and find a way to give back? And I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, Joe, thank you for your call.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, one thing I would share is when our folks join Teach for America, you better be ready to have your nose even closer to the grindstone. Because we have folks that join, and the expectation is to work relentlessly and do whatever it takes to push your kids ahead. But we actually do see a growing number of, we call them mid-career professionals, who are actually applying to join our corps. And so, again, you know, we're open to a wide variety of people. We actually had the first mother and daughter, I believe, do it this year. The daughter did it first, and the mother got inspired by what her daughter was doing, applied, and was accepted.
Some more comments from the web. Spencer writes, when Teach for America teachers show up at a school system like CMS, for instance, principals are directed by the system to funnel the best performing students into the Teach for America classes. Does anyone expect low scores from this practice? Also, the teachers are likely to leave before they see any hard cases that would really test their abilities to teach. Also, the recent Harvard study of CMS indicated that Teach for America teachers had little or no effect on test scores. And in fairness to that, that's two grades, 4 through 8, in two subjects, but not at the high school level. So how would you answer the first? Is it true that they get the best students?
That has not been our experience. And in fact, there was a study done a few years ago that looked across 6 sites and found that on average, the kids coming into our core members' classrooms were at the 14th percentile against the national norm. You know, they're reaching some of the most underperforming kids in the country. And many people would actually say that they're assigned the toughest kids.
Is it true in Charlotte?
Yeah. And what we found is that our teachers are certainly not getting kids who are higher performing than others. They get exceptional kids, but the most challenging cases.
As well. Roy writes, I believe that for anyone who wants it in the public schools in America, I'm going to start that over because I'm not sure I understand the syntax. I believe that for anyone who wants it, comma, the public schools in America offer excellent education. There will always be those who do not take advantage of the opportunity. Perhaps many of our problems with education lie outside of our schools. When will we hold parents and students accountable? Is that beginning, holding students accountable?
You know, the best teachers are bringing, as I keep saying, you know, the parents and the kids into the process. And I think in many cases our schools have you know, they're such intimidating forces for parents, especially parents in the communities where we're working.
I can't believe I'm hearing music, which means we're almost out of time. But President Obama just recently revised his plans to change, teach No Child Left Behind. Are you in agreement with what he wants to do?
We're excited about what we're seeing at the federal level, really excited, and about the progress it's driving at the state and local levels.
I wish we had more time. Wendy Kopp, founder and CEO of Teach for America. Tim Hurley, the executive director of Teach for America, Charlotte. Thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.